Season 3, episode 44 of this podcast, and this time we'll be discussing another interesting topic about emerging financial technology in the Asia-Pacific region. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Gloria Su, founding partner of Almatech Pte. Limited, based from Singapore, as she explains to us the significant importance of financial technology to our digital economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. According to the survey from McKinsey, adoption of digital banking in emerging markets has caught up with the developing markets as well. Between 2017 and 2021, the share of consumers in Asia-Pacific emerging markets actively using digital banking increased sharply, rising 33 percentage points from 54% in 2017 to 88% in 2021. And the level of digital adoption among consumers in developed Asia-Pacific markets has remained stable, and approximately at 90%. Consumers' enthusiastic use of fintech tools and e-wallets in emerging markets has pushed the market penetration of these innovative solutions beyond the level of adoption in the region's developed markets. In emerging Asia-Pacific, fintech apps and e-wallet penetration reached 54% in 2021, compared with 43% in developed Asia-Pacific. At the same time, more than half of respondents in most Asia-Pacific markets report that cash is used for less than 30% of weekly spending. The shift to digital banking has happened quickly and was likely accelerated by existing trends, such as increasing use of digital channels for diverse transactions, including banking, and broader use of teleconference video calls in place of face-to-face meetings. And this has intensified during the COVID-19 pandemic as well. Survey results suggest that the high levels of digital adoption are likely to hold as the pandemic subsides. Asia-Pacific consumers' embrace of digital banking tools indicates that banks have an opportunity to leverage existing assets to strengthen and diversify their digital offering. To seize this opportunity, each bank will need to reinvent its business and delivery models by focusing on three key areas. Number one, the value of branches. Number two, customer engagement. And number three, the bank's overall competitive positioning. Consumer behavior across Asia-Pacific strongly favors mobile and online banking. Approximately 97% of Asia-Pacific consumers either consider the digital channel the best of several ways to interact with their bank, or use it as one of several channels in a multi-channel or omni-channel offering. By contrast, 2% of consumers in developed Asia-Pacific and 3% in emerging Asia-Pacific continues to conduct most of their bank businesses at the branch. Despite the marked decline in branch activity, branches still play a crucial role in an omni-channel model, not least because they have long served to reinforce trust in banks as consumers' primary partner in managing their money. Banks can further strengthen these relationships by digitizing processes to the maximum extent possible, so that branch staff have time to concentrate on higher value activities like advising on loans, insurance, or investments. Consultations with a generalist might take place in person at the branch, and the bank can offer remote consultations with specialists via digital channels. Given the right sales model and an optimized physical footprint, branch-based revenue has the potential to exceed network costs, even as the share of transactions, including new sales handled through digital channels, increases. To sharpen their competitive advantage against digital-only banks, incumbent banks should ensure that branch-based human interaction go beyond functional convenience to outperform on empathy and understanding. To meet the challenges posed by new entrants, each bank must have a clear vision of its position in the competitive landscape and the role it aims to fulfill. In many cases, this role will be that of either a digital attacker or an omni-channel incumbent. Whether the goal is launching a standalone digital bank or building the tech infrastructure and organizational capabilities required for an end-to-end integration in an omni-channel environment, the investment is significant, and an organization must go beyond convenience, speed, ease of use, and security to introduce innovative features and a compelling value proposition that distinguish the offering from the competition. As Asia-Pacific consumers turn increasingly to digital channels to manage all aspects of their finances, incumbent banks must weigh carefully these strategic questions above and chart their course forward. To thrive in this increasingly dynamic market, each bank will need to build or acquire the technology, talent, and ways of working that will enable its scale distinctive and relevant innovation quickly and at a lower cost. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Gloria Su, founding partner of Almontech Pte. Limited from Singapore, as she walks us through the relevance of financial technology and its value proposition to our digital economy. It's a great privilege to have you, Gloria, and welcome to FinCircle.
Thank you so much, Edgar, for this opportunity. That this invitation seems really like a privilege, you know, because looking at the number of people you have invited in your podcast, so I feel really honored.
Thank you so much, Gloria. Let's probably start by describing the present situation of the fintech adoption in the Asia-Pacific region. And where do you think we are heading?
As you know, right now, my business has always been in Southeast Asia. So I was living in Thailand for a while. I'm a Malaysian by nationality and now living in Singapore, plus having business in Indonesia as well as in Philippines. In my opinion, right now, the fintech adoption in APAC, it's moving towards ESG, sustainability. Okay, and though I'm not familiar in the space thoroughly, still, I know that for the fact, many organizations are moving towards a direction because of the younger generation who has learned to support only organization who has got the ESG practice. Okay, so one of them would be, I'm telling you, sharing with you, is that the fintech that allows banking software as well as any digital transformation allows the people to implement their ESG into their corporate practice.
You are well known in the industry as a seasoned deal maker, a very effective sales coach, and also have an impressive track record of helping businesses thrive on their respective fields in the region. In view of this, what are your relevant takeaways from these remarkable experiences?
Thank you for asking that question. Maybe I should just tell you a little bit about how I run my business. Why did I end up to become a sales and business coaching? I have been a sales consultant, or rather sales outsourcing consulting business for the past 10 years. And during this period of time, I offer end-to-end sales services for my client, meaning lead generation to hiring of the salespeople, at the same time offering coaching for founders of businesses, because ultimately they want to grow their business. And then once in a while, I'll take on the role as a outsourced sales director to manage the team on an interim basis. And I also move on to doing training, sales training, to develop the people into revenue making for the company. So my experience in sales coaching has been very rewarding. Of course, because I started off doing sales when I was as young as when I was 13 years old. So if you're saying about sales and enterprising spirit, it is all about making money. Okay, and the reason why I choose the route of sales is because I don't want to be poor. So I came from a humble beginning, my family, and it was not easy for me to actually have nice and interesting experience like what my classmates do. So because of that, I've started to start my journey in my entrepreneurial journey, which is car washing. Okay, very as simple as that, because I can just get a pail and then move around. So it is about moving out of your comfort zone, seeing what are the opportunity around you. So I'm an opportunist generally. Opportunist meaning it's not about taking advantage of people, it is taking advantage of the circumstance you have. You know, whatever you have in your environment, it's how you actually maximize your talent by utilizing and leveraging on the opportunity you have at that time, regardless of your status. So as time goes by, during my teenage years, you know, I work really hard to make my extra income. You know, part of the things that I've done was actually doing car washing, car polishing, and then I went into even dealing with translation, interpretation, you know, and then high court documentation that I went in to type so that I offer services to legal firm. I also did a lot of things such as like fashion show. So I just go into something which I like. Now, the fact is that how can this experience make me who I am today? Having all this growing up experience, working and studying and planning for my schedule, looking after my siblings and also my family members helped me to manage my time properly at very young age. And then through this, I know that even right now, many people are asking me, how do you manage sales coaching, and then running your business in Royal Consulting as well as Almondtech? It is very simple. You just have to leverage with the people you have. Okay, and I'd like to also share the experience that my first company, which I sold, which was actually it's a image consulting business. When I sold it, I want to share with you that experience before I sold it. I had a very interesting journey with my first client. The reason why I never give up, even though it was my first experience for corporate client, it was AirAsia Academy. So they made me, waited for to meet. I wanted to meet them very badly because I want to train them. So I was doing sales training for corporate clients. So they were my first client that I wanted to go into when I first started my business. That was like some time back in my during my 30s. Okay, so yeah, this is some time ago. But then what happened was that the experience that I had was that I never gave up until they gave me the purchase order. There is a difference between chasing a deal that will never materialize and allowing your client to understand why you came into the picture at that point in time. Was there a need? You need to make sure that your client has got a few challenges that they need to actually solve and that you can offer that solution. It is the same practice I'm doing for Almondtech today. Okay, so when I see there is a need and there is a gap to be matched, I will find the solution that can actually offer for the client and then provide them whatever they need. Then after that, we will know for the fact is that there will be deals that will come through because we are now offering a solution for all the challenges that they're faced with. And as a deal maker, it is not about pushing and closing deal. It is about meeting the needs of your client. And all these years in sales and also deal making, I enjoy the fact that I can solve problems, not just through my methodology, but also leveraging on whatever partners I have around me. So I'm just someone who connect deals between one party to another. Let's say, for instance, someone need for instance, okay, a good example is when I coach a client and they are at a growth stage, but what they're lacking was actually a marketing campaign. And I will introduce partners who are relating to a marketing campaign into them so that they can actually roll out a good campaign. And then I will coach them into delivering what they need to create that entire funnel. All right. Where else in the fintech industry is a little bit unique is that when you know that there is a problem with fraud, any anti-money laundering, you need to know which solutions can offer the best for the client. So I would then propose certain solutions so that they can actually help to fix the problem they are currently faced with because their service to their client matters the most to me. So when I serve my client, I'm serving my client's client. Okay, so this is the kind of experience and takeaways that I like to share. Of course, my story, I can share a lot about my stories, but maybe this will be a very good way of explaining to you how I can transit from one to another. At the end of it is how I do my deal making. Perhaps also all these experience was helps me to leverage on the uniqueness of the product as well as the situation, economic situation, was when I was selling medical equipment for Toshiba Medical. When I was serving the hospital industries back during the Malaysian 7 Malaysian plan. Now, I did my last project with them was a paperless hospital, and that has given me a breadth of technology and digitization, the importance of it if we need to move forward in the modern world of digital transformation. So with that, I never look back. I only know one thing is that we need to continue to improve so that we can offer better solutions for our client. And not only that, our mind will continue to grow and learn about adopting what's best for our clients and to their clients.
I understand that you're the founding partner of this very promising fintech company called Advantech Pte. Limited, based in Singapore, as you have mentioned a few minutes ago. Perhaps you can tell us more about it and its exceptional technology solutions and its strategic plans for the region.
Yeah, so I'm totally new in the banking industry or financial institution. Well, it was actually introduced to me to this industry by a so-called client of mine. Well, Advantech was birthed because we believe that there is a great opportunity ahead of us to offer our partners a safe and swift digital transformation journey. Okay, so we need to create a secure and also trustworthy solution-based software that is meant for banking, healthcare, insurance industry, as well as the retail industry with a peace of mind. I know the fact that moving forward with digital transformation, it is not an easy task, but also it is not that difficult if you put a great team into making it possible to transit. So what Advantech can offer is it is to help our client who are in the banking industry, the insurance, the retail, the healthcare industry, to rely on a specific transition through us, through Advantech. So Advantech was started in Singapore, but then our main focus right now is in Philippines. And through Philippines, I also learned, that market for me is really new, but I also learned of the past 6 months is that it is there has got a great opportunity for the software industry. And sometimes we are living in our own bubble in Singapore. We forgot to see that their world out there has got so much opportunity and Manila is one of those. And it is a company that we believe we can help our client to transit successfully. And in order for client to transit successfully, they need to have a reliable local company. That is why partners who came in from India, they need to sell the solution to Philippines. We need to offer the local team. As you know that my background is in sales training and also offering sales people, I'm only specialized in sales, and therefore using this experience that I have over the past 2 decades is to also offer the same thing to my partners in offering the sales people locally. So our sales people were trained, and then is to foster close knitted relationship with our partners' client, which are the banks, the healthcare, the insurance company, as well as the retail chains. Okay, so my salespeople will move into the ground on the daily and weekly basis, whereas our partners who are from a region or rather from anywhere outside of Philippines can engage our service, which is a local entity, to run and transact all this business on their behalf. So local companies will also felt that they are not feeling insecure about the organization that they buy the software with. Because all these softwares are based overseas, and now with the local company, we take full responsibilities in making ensuring the deals are through. And also, we also offer the partners' clients, on the ground that we are here to stay. Okay, so when we say that we are here to stay, we hold hand with them. We also make sure that we comply to all the legal requirements and of course the after sales service that can give the client a lot more assurance. So that's what Advantech is all about. So later on, I probably can share with you the type of clients that we have, our partners, that we are currently serving as well.
What are your thoughts, Gloria, on the financial inclusion, digital initiatives in the post-COVID-19 era, working in the Asia-Pacific region?
My thought is, okay, financial inclusion after COVID. In fact, I must say that COVID is a blessing in disguise, yeah, because we always, I mean, we were of course stricken by it, and then bad things has happened globally, you know, and especially to business, it has caused so much of losses, and a lot of people suffered out of this. Okay, on the other spectrum, I personally feel that my thoughts about it is that the post-COVID has allowed the social impact that offers better standard of living to the lower income household and also small or micro businesses. Okay, how does this work? My thought is, you know, like recently, even in Manila DITC, the Department of ICT, they actually we had a good discussion about how to roll out programs for women entrepreneurs. So I'm working with them hand in hand closely. How are they going to reach out digitally? Because the importance of digital, they realized during COVID, how the rural area people are not able to reach out to them because of harder to access to digital transformation, or rather, no, it's not digital transformation. It's harder for them to. For the rural area to adopt any digital transformation because of the lack of sponsors and maybe lack of facilities. And also, they don't have the right bandwidth. And of course, the education that takes that was not properly educated to the rural area because they do not have the access to technology. So, because of that COVID situation, it has rushed almost every government. In all those nations, especially the emerging markets and or even the developing nation, have now rushed into progressing in their society. Now, in order to rush into progressing in society, the first thing they did to cater was actually educating the children, because you cannot stop them from being educated. And you cannot give yourself excuses all because they don't have access to technology. We have to leave them out. No. The government realized that because of the government also living in the city where they have got access to technology, they realized that the people need support. So this financial inclusion digital initiatives has somehow sped up, you know, by the government in every nation, in every country. So that it offer better opportunity for the rural area as well. And I'd like to bring you back into the women entrepreneur, because one of them that I heard was my experience when I speak to someone in ADB. And this guy was sharing with me how they actually include women entrepreneur and started the journey for business women in Pakistan. So I took it that because I will live in the First World Nation, therefore I didn't really realize about the importance of women entrepreneur in the rural area, especially in a nation where maybe women are being marginalized. Okay, so what happened is that there are something that need to be taken care of, and therefore government decided to actually improve the system by having access for them. And likewise, when I came to Manila and I realized that DICT is actually looking into women entrepreneurship as well, creating a lot of opportunity for them to do business, you know, seamlessly, and also they are creating a lot of local campaigns. Now I am also starting to work with a lot of organization to sponsor events as well as laptops, you know, used laptops or whatever, you know, whoever they want to give out. And then they're coming up with a campaign. I'm working closely with them in running these campaigns. So women and children education, these two has always been a focus by the United Nations, and therefore it is now being practiced in even in Philippines at present. So I personally feel that the post-COVID initiative for digital transformation has allowed financial inclusiveness, you know, and to create better standard of living in the people and reduce income inequality as well. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Given that we are now in a data-driven financial system, how do you think we can further enhance its processes to make it more inclusive?
I think it's really meant for the government to answer. But based on my little knowledge about data-driven financial system, how this can be more inclusive is that maybe offer better loans, I would say, to the smaller businesses, you know, and okay, you know, sharing of data is hard, okay, and especially when we are talking about the sensitive of the privacy as well. So when it comes to data and you want to share the data for among lending companies, especially to small businesses, it becomes very sensitive to share. But if you don't share it, that's why a lot of organizations find it very hard to give out loans to micro businesses. And then in order for you to not marginalize certain group of people or small businesses, maybe to implement, that is why I like the fact that there is this thing called crowdfunding. Crowdfunding, it is another method of allowing data-driven financial system to be inclusive. Okay, and it allows people to their data is being protected, at the same time it is still being shared among only the lending company, so they can offer certain credits for them. So, and therefore all these micro SMEs will have the chance to grow their business. I was working for, or rather I had a client which is called, which is a crowdfunding company. I was helping them to grow their business in Indonesia, where it started off in Surabaya. This was back in 2017, I think, yeah, 2017. It was really new, crowdfunding was new, but yet, you know, the government wanted to adopt it, but there was no ruling to allow any crowdfunding because they are unsure of the implication of crowdfunding in the market. So during that time, I was also learning everything new, you know, and crowdfunding is another method where you can actually crowdfund with a small amount of money by the potential investors if you've got great ideas. Now, if you have got great ideas, you simply want someone to crowdfund so you can create the product and then sell the product in advance, you know, to have, maybe you create a prototype and then, let's say, for instance, I've got this girl called Jenny and then she wants to create a product for women. Maybe it is how to, maybe something that they can use to carry, maybe a baby carrier. Now, they want a baby carrier that can move around because women are always agile and you know that your kids are always crying. So I'm thinking of the mother's point of view, a young mother point of view. Now they want to spend more time with the children and they want to work. They want to be mobile. We know that there are a lot of products out there who has got baby carrier that is important. But we also want to put our handphones, we want to put everything inside the slots into our vest. So maybe you want to create a prototype of a vest with babies, okay? And so what happened is that if in order for us to know that, you know, this woman, she is she has got a certain maybe credibility, and this data is useful for lending companies, for instance, because she has lent before and she knows she wants to run a business very well, and then maybe the company has got a solution based information to help them grow their business. Maybe that would be the good way of having this data shared by with other smaller companies, smaller lending companies. So after lending one side, we know that we don't want to duplicate. What else can she do? Maybe now the first one is based on personal credit and data. Maybe the second one is based on your product prototype, because there is a future for it. And there are crowd who likes your product. They will start investing in you, for instance. So crowdfunding is a very good platform. And what happened is that it will allow you to be creative and design something with a prototype and sell it in advance by telling them, now I've got this prototype, now I want to have, I want to create 1,000 products, but I don't have enough money to create. So in order to be inclusive, all this information, this data can be stored, and the lending company can come in by saying, okay, maybe we can leverage based on your product, based on your credit ability, and also maybe based on your product prototype, how many numbers of people who are interested in your product. Based on that data, maybe they can actually share it, and then another form of lending can be allowing them to use it so they can feel inclusive in this data-driven financial system. I hope this one speaks and answers the question.
It certainly does. From your perspective, Gloria, what do you think are the things that works effectively well for the fintech solutions available in the market today, and the things that we can still improve further?
Okay, there are actually a lot of fintech solutions available in the market. So I will only touch on the topic, based on the solutions for the banking, insurance, and healthcare industry. Okay, so as we know that, AI becomes very significant part of our life right now, and also machine learning. So everything that we have to adopt in the fintech solutions today has to be data-driven decisions by AI and also machine learning. So AI actually empowers banks, insurance companies, with fraud detection as well as lending approvals, risk monitoring, as well as investment proposal. Now, as we know that as we progress in life, there are also many hackers out there, coming up with a different way of scheming and scamming people. So the banks need to protect their own customers as well. Any of this detection, it's actually a very good solution for banks to be able to capture so that they can protect their own clients. Now, without all these solutions, the banks will still be running their business like before, where it is easy to break into and hack into their bank account. So that's when, you will probably lose client if this thing happens. Just one bad experience by one bank, it will actually create anyone who are, especially people who are a high net worth who want to move their account away to somewhere else. So in order to protect the client, they too first must be at the top of the game, so must implement what's the best for them. Okay, so there's so many solutions out there that we know. It's offering like super apps, it's like a next generation of mobile apps, platform that can offer like convenient solutions, like, because we know that people of today, the younger generation, they like the one button solution. Okay, one button solution, speed. Even though they're very fast, they can set everything up. You have to set everything for them, so it's one button solution. And then how do we encourage the young older generation, especially the baby boomer, to adopt the digital transformation? It's also one button solution, because they do not know anything else. They do not know, many of them are having difficulty adapting to the even the mobile banking today. Let alone, even the generation before that. So in order to transit properly so that you are not left behind, a lot of these user engagement all-in-one services are being offered everywhere. So the banking has to also up the game by doing so. And we know that there are many solutions. How do you know they are actually good? So you need to look at their case study. What are the success stories they have implemented, and making sure that it is easily, transit into their current system. Changing a banking software system, their core banking is expensive. Okay, even the healthcare industry is the same thing. To change anything that they have already implemented the last 10 years is very costly for them to actually implement a new one now. So the newer fintech solutions offer modular integration. And therefore, even they can't change the whole system, they need to upgrade on a modular basis. So if you can upgrade on a modular basis, that will mean that you can actually offer to the current market today. You don't have to change everything at one go, but you can change on a modular basis. Okay, whatever you've seen, there may be many other solutions. You are actually given with so many choices. So you just look into the service they offer, what kind of backup plan they have. And not only that, we need to have the correct staffing in order for them to cater to the implementation and also the integration. There's so many things that is behind all these companies and solutions can offer. So that's why even today, I personally find it is harder for emerging market, especially solution provider, to break into the market. But if they've got a one single idea that creates a total solution for any solution from banks and insurance industry and healthcare, they will be the first one to implement. And then when it's being implemented, just like for instance, when I was doing the first paperless hospital, that was Selayang Hospital in Malaysia, during the Seven Malaysian Plan, I was excited. But do you know what came with this excitement? All kinds of problems because of the mindset. Number one, nobody want to change. Number two, is that the implementation, it was so painful that everyone had to take turns to learn how this is going to work. Okay, it's not just about throwing away the system. If you change the forefront of the digitization, you need to change the back end as well. What about your data storage? Where are you going to store all these things? What happened to all the document printed? If you have got let's say for instance, you have got maybe a surgery like 8 years ago, 5 years ago, and maybe you had a transplant. What do you do next? Where do you store all this information? So digital transformation takes a journey. It's not like just change one area, everything will be implemented. So I was also learning at that time, which part to implement first. So it's the same thing today. We are even spoiled for choices. There's so many in the market, but of course they are good and they are bad. There are a lot of companies who came in, really strong, but they didn't sustain because they couldn't manage the business. A lot of founders who are very good technology, they do not know how to run the business, and therefore, why is it the client are so afraid? Because after a while, if you do not maintain your business, you will close down, and that's the fear of our client in the banking industry today. Yet, on the other hand, they have to balance between the new technology to be implemented so that they can be the first bank to implement or the first insurance company to implement. But on the other hand, they're also worried that what if after implemented, you cannot sustain in the market. So there are many fears. So there are many things to look into in order to get the best solution that is available in the market to suit your company's or corporate growth. So I believe that all these super apps, out there, if they are good, have an open mind. Do not close your mind into learning new things. Listen to as many presentations as possible. Throw as many questions as possible. The speed of having new solutions today, it's like every month you've got new solutions somewhere is emerging. How do you know which one is good? So be open to listen, to understand, and therefore, because the creativity of the young people today, the talented people in the IT world, it is, I don't know, just somehow that all these people became, they're so fast, they're so creative that they can see things that is beyond what we can see ahead of us. So I have adopted this practice, even as a business owner of two companies, even as a business coach to offer to my coaching client, even at currently for all the founders. I believe in one thing is that be open to transformation, be open to solutions, and then do not close your mind, especially if you are working full time as a C level, you need to keep up with the change in technology. It's easier said than done. You can just say that, oh, I cannot keep up anymore. I just ignore it. However, if you are still in the same industry, you cannot ignore it. We just need to know what they are in the market. And now with the ChatGPT, you can almost know that there's so many things out there in the world, whatever solutions they have. So, Google, you can find a lot of answers as well. So we are spoiled for choices, all right? If you're living in the first world nation, it's even faster moving. So, and then how can we still improve? Well, I think we need to improve in the way we make decisions. Okay, it's important because when we improve the way we make decision, then you improve the scalability of your organization as well. And then you will know how to position your people and then how to best use your budget and your resources in the company. Yeah.
Very good point, Gloria. Sharing credit data while respecting privacy is an enormous task to comply with. How do you think we can approach it in such a way that we can maintain its right balance?
Yeah, I think this is still a problem faced by the lending company, you know, and we know that the government is now enforcing privacy, data privacy. So we can't ignore that because you don't want your privacy to be breached, your data. And therefore, government has to first take a massive move to make sure that our privacy is being protected. You know, living in Singapore, Data Protection Act has been around for a while now, and now it is even more, even for SMEs as well, because many SMEs do not know how to protect the data of their client yet. Okay, so they offer lots of grants, lots of lessons, you know, to educate the smaller SMEs. Now, credit data is very interesting because sometimes the wealthy people, even though they seem like they seem to project like they have a very good credit ratings and also their information seems to be good. But unfortunately, not every one of them, because a lot of them, business owners especially, have got high gearing, and you know, they have got very bad credit data. And with this credit data that they have rating for themselves, we have to first understand who will be using this information. Most of the time are the banks, okay? Okay, whereas the privacy will be the healthcare a lot more. But of course, the privacy, the information is everywhere, all division of into the nation. So with the credit data given, you know, we have to balance it, right? It is especially useful for the lending companies. Based on my experience, right now that I know, what is useful is for the lending company, especially to the micro SMEs. Earlier on, I was sharing with you about the inclusiveness of data that was being used, and now I'm talking about how this credit data will be used effectively will be by the lending companies, because we need to offer fairer financing. It is also to protect the lending companies. In a less progressive nation, one lending company do not share information with another lending company. And therefore, a business owner can probably go to A, B, C, D, E, F lending company to borrow the money. And then yet, nobody actually know the credit data, unless it is governed by the government. So what do you do in this situation? And yet, on the other hand, they want to protect the privacy of the lenders, okay? So in order to balance it out, I think, you know, though I do not know how it works right now, I think I would not probably know how they balance it, but it would be good to share information only from, I don't know, maybe from the government point of view. It has to be implemented top down from the government point of view down, and then they can actually share information based on credit rating only. Not other not other information, like for lending companies only can see their financial status. You know, for healthcare company only can see their healthcare data. Maybe that will be useful. You know, like pharmaceutical information, what medicine you're taking, all this information as well, it's also privacy, right? And then only you can actually have access to that area. I have got little knowledge about this area. You know, how do we maintain balance? Seriously, I do not know. But I feel that whatever that Singapore is currently doing, they are doing a great job, because a lot of lending companies have access to the credit data rating, you know, of the lenders, okay? And they still share information, and yet privacy is protected. And everything is shared through their, we call it the SingPass, where we will log in, you know, through our authentic identity, that actually has all our information inside there. Okay, so, well, it helps the company to overcome vulnerabilities, you know, if you can have such benefit for them. And then they also will develop trust with the companies, with their customers, because customers are always afraid about their information being shared. Okay, so This is part of what we call it the data security and data privacy.
How do you foresee the fintech of the future, Gloria? And what should be our realistic expectation on this regard?
Okay, future of fintech. You know, initially when COVID came, I sort of like having a shock of my life of how to deal with things, because I always have solutions. Now the digital era has actually forced me to adapt, okay? And if we do not adapt, we will be left behind. So as I progress in life, you know, though I don't really like the implementation of digital journey, including even using the latest technology to project manage my clients' projects, as well as managing CRM for my client, I mean my client data and the information among my team. You know, there are a lot of effort for me as well to learn all these new digital transformation for business, all right? However, I personally feel that we have to stay competitive. And therefore, even as a sales trainer or even a sales consultant, a sales company that I'm running, I believe in using certain operational digital already, a system for my client so that they can actually monitor their growth as a coachee, meaning they are the founders of business. They need to monitor their growth. So I need to have something that like I use Trello for them to monitor themselves, all right? These are simple things. I'm not even talking about the fintech yet. I'm talking about even implementing something in within the company, you know, like having a HR system that is geared, you know, driven by AI. How do you use that? Executive or C-suite need to learn all these details as well. You know, and I also know of one of my clients who is actually a chef who educate all the traditional chefs how to use the POS system and also the convection oven, you know, digital oven, the number of time they have to use instead of traditional cooking. So these are the future of information technology. Can we ignore it? We can't. We'll be out of job if we ignore it. Okay, so, but we know that it's flooding the market right now. How do we know what's good and what's not? Just need to know what is ahead of you. Just one step ahead of you. Like for instance, I just need to know ahead of me what my clients want. Is to actually prevent fraud, you know, and then simple solution for implementation within the company must save time, and then modular implementation, integration, and all these are just ahead of them what they need. So if you can think about for your own company, how do you foresee forward? We can't really see very far, but then you can see what's a step ahead. A step ahead, you need this, then you need to implement it. Now, if you do not implement what's a step ahead of you, by next year, you probably feel sad that, that you actually lost the track. You've been left behind already. You know, when big blockchain was introduced, I was learning what blockchain was, and then suddenly Bitcoin was introduced, and I had to learn. You know, I was like so clueless what they are. You know, I only learned about it like 1 year later, and then I also went into NFTs and understanding what is this non-fundable NFTs. This token, what are they for, and how it is relevant to us today? You know, and then mascot. How can you use mascot as a real marketing but using NFTs to brand your company? Wow, that was like a big change in me the last 2 years, all right? So, but I don't want to be left behind, so I need to learn so that I want to stay competitive with my client. Now, the younger generations are moving forward and knowing so much, and how can we be left behind? If I do not know how to help my younger clients, I'm not fit to actually to become their coach as well. So my clients, they're all way younger. They are like, you know, like 20 years younger, 10 years younger, 20 years younger than me, and they're doing so well now. It is so amazing, you know, and so I learned about what exactly is AI solutions, how is it powered by AI, you know, and then why this implementation is important even for micro businesses. Now, if you find that you do not have time, you do not know how to leverage on it, you don't know where to start, talk to somebody. And then talk to somebody so that it can actually, this person can share with you how to realistically build your expectation towards it. Okay. Sometimes, when we are educated by people who can tell stories, right, we think that everything is so easy to implement. Not so. You need to consider so many things. Just like when I first implemented the paperless hospital, it's the same problem I faced with. I thought that, oh, just paperless are very good there. And also next time they don't have to use film anymore. Little did I know that it affect the film industries. Konica was no longer as strong as they were before. And then Toshiba has now become a Canon. So everything has changed. Why? Because now has gone into digital space. And then the film, hard copy film, is no longer in produce. But in Singapore, they're still having that. It's so interesting. They still have their film produced. And it becomes expensive to produce because you need chemical, you need the space, and then rental is expensive in Singapore, so you need to have a dark room. So having a digitization, you if you move one step ahead and you can anticipate what's going to come, you reduce the space, and then you can maximize the space without having to pay extra rental for the dark room, for instance. So it is all these simple things using logic to move forward each time. That is why never close your mind in learning, because through all these exposures you have, you will learn how to move forward one step ahead. Just one step ahead each time if you can. I know sometimes you need to sprint, then you sprint necessary for your industry, but if not about your industry, then you can actually just cruise through by walking forward, moving forward, knowing what's happening as you move along in your journey. So as we know that, realistically, the AI actually reduces time, saves you money in the long run, and of course, increase efficiency in your company as well. So for companies, it's best that you look at one department at a time. So even for banks, like lending companies is different from treasury, and then different from their HR, different from their even from the division of maybe their other trade, So what happened next? Maybe the implementation modular basis will help them. Because if you look at the entire system, it's hard to see how to implement and how to move forward. But if you look at to just by department, maybe start off with department basis. Right now, if we even have a solution for HR to implement to take care of maybe the roster of radiologists, the nurses, for instance, that applies all their clocking of hours and can monitor even their what's this called overtime. And then how do you govern? Let's say you've got healthcare in the region, because right now a lot of software for HR is only modular to the city, to the country, but it cannot be implemented in other countries. So how can you actually have one solution that manage all of it? By not, you don't have to change your system, but just integrate certain part of your software. So this is what we can offer. So things like that. And this is what we just have to realistically implement our expectation moving forward.
Given your significant experience in this field, Gloria, what are your advice on this subject matter, particularly for those who are relatively new, and even for those who have been doing this for a while but still struggling somehow?
Yeah, okay. So there's still a lot of companies, especially the SMEs and also local conglomerates, because they are large companies but yet do not have the right people to implement any of this digital transformation. I'm speaking about public sector company locally. I'm not talking about multinationals. Multinationals, most of them, they actually implement quite fast because they know what is needed to do to be ahead of the game. But public sector company are the ones that many of them are still struggling in their local conglomerate, old-fashioned traditional business transaction. So for them to implement, they need to allocate a lot of budget. So I'm going to speak on two spectrum. One is for the micro SMEs, and then one is for those old-fashioned traditional bread and mortars business. And they are the ones that who need changes at this present moment. Now, based on if they are having, they're struggling to change and transit, is because they maybe do not have the right expertise. So number one, get the right expert to speak to you. You know, engage them, pay the money to get consulting. If you don't trust one consultant, go to the second one or the third one. Can get started by talking how best to implement your system in your based on your culture and your budget and also how your business is being run. Okay, and whereas the micro SMEs, you again start off by attending some of these courses run by government. I'm sure there are many many answers in education that you can learn from to stay ahead. Now in Singapore, we have got this privilege of grant application. Okay, so when you apply for a grant to implement something, for instance, like they have got grant for digitization because it's lacking of manpower, especially labor for F&B, labor for construction. So they have got grant application for digitizing the entire business. So if your country do not have such privilege, then you need to find alternative like implementing, starting by hiring a outsourced technology guy. I have been working, my team are based from India, from Indonesia, from Malaysia. I'm based in Singapore, right? So Indonesia, Malaysia, India, and also Manila. All my outsourced team for the past few years because I use virtual services. Now, that is why I can actually keep the loss, the my cost low, and by having them. They have got their own full-time job, but I offer them a part-time role so that they can also help me to grow my business. Now, there are many ways to implement technology. Number one is that you can have a team somewhere, reliable team. If you don't know anybody in that field, find it, search for them. There are a lot out there. Go networking out, you know, in associations or whatever that you can in your own nation, you know, and chambers of commerce, for instance, so that you can have reliable companies. So go out there and then mix around, hang out with them, search for them, consult them. Get yourself educated first, what is needed for your company, and then see what kind of information require the best solution for your culture, working culture. And then there are many free platforms out there in the world that you can adopt. You know that, so our mindset has to be open. Like if you know digital transformation, it's very prominent for especially in this Southeast Asia will be Korea. We have a huge transformation in Indonesia as well. The younger generation, even in Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, you know, and including Malaysia. So what happened is that you need to look at what is suitable for you, because there are a lot of noise out there. There are a lot of varieties, but start off by educating yourself through a proper consultant for your business. Do not save those money because don't think that you know everything. It is not your core business into transforming your business. Find someone who is good. Like a good example would be, I've got one company who actually do integration, which is called Renosys for a lot of other software. And they are one who actually help you to integrate as well, including the systems in the banks, insurance companies, retail, and also healthcare. So whatever system you have existing, you don't have to worry about integration. They can actually come in to help you with that. They've got all the right staffing, you know, and then coming in to help you to integrate whatever you need. So even you've got an IT department, sometimes that IT department do not have the latest information to integrate. So then you need to outsource it. If you can outsource it, you want finding the outsource partner, you don't want them to come in and mess up your system. So you need to find someone reliable. Some money cannot be saved. So if you're still struggling, speak to someone, you know, you can contact me and I can refer you to the right people, you know. After this, you can get my details as well there during the interview, after the interview.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're working with, Gloria, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? Most importantly, what are the easiest way of reaching out or contacting you?
Okay. Yeah, so I am definitely working right now. The Almond Tech is doing we are focusing on banking, insurance, as well as healthcare. And I'm also moving towards manpower placement as well, both virtual and also physical space. So in order for me to Maybe I'll just share a little bit about who are the kind of clients that currently we have onboarded our partners, who earlier on when I was mentioning about Renosys, and they were one of my early adopter, my clients actually, or rather we call it our vendors, who actually came on board with us, supporting first, even though I've got no other traction yet. They provide software developers, development services globally, okay, which includes like enterprise mobility solutions, e-commerce development. We're talking about, large scale e-commerce development. You don't want it to crash, right, when you launch it. Then web design, of course, is a commercial web design, offshore staffing. Then, of course, IT consulting, testing, and they are built for iOS and Android platforms. So they are the ones who can actually offer very good solutions to integrate like out system. Once you have a software, you need someone to back you up with all this staffing and the solution provider. So to implement, to make sure that everything runs smoothly, it's not like one time when you implement it, put in the solution and it will run by itself. No, it doesn't work that way. You need to have implementers. So they are one of them who actually do the integration for you. Our system is one of them, and then Salesforce as well as Adobe. So this is my client who does that. And yeah, so they are my first vendor. Then the second one, which I like to share with you, will be this is what I want to, if you are listening and you are also in the industry of core banking, I like to bring forth also Pure Software. They have got a unified fintech platform that enables financial institutions to accomplish the digital transformation. And I'm talking about even to promote financial inclusion, so they do digital banking, digital wallets, and also payments, loan lifecycle management, merchant management, and then BNPL platform as well as core banking. So they've got this brand name called Arta, and it is really useful for digital customer onboarding, micro lending as well, through a single conversion of their platform. So it is that is what I'm working on with them. We offer salespeople to sell their software. They are also very established globally. And yeah, and basically it is they have got a very strong team. They've already visited even Philippines together with me and are offering outsourcing to make sure that all the inquiries are made properly as well. Then the next one I'd like to share with you is okay, the flagship identity, which is e-document, it's actually a digital document. It's called eMudhra. eMudhra is very famous in India. They are like the, if you are Singaporean, you will know SingPass in Singapore, where your identity is tagged to the government service portal. And same thing, eMudhra is like a identity that is tagged to the Indian government's portal. So it, they offer powerful identity access, okay? In fact, with authentication. Okay, which give organization the edge when it comes to serving, securing everything online, through access, signature and document authentication. They are really new with us, but I find that this product is very useful because now we can safely say that you can go paperless easily. Because they are at this stage at the right time, at the right moment to implement what a lot of organizations need, that is to paperless their system and process. To because it's having papers, if you have to file all your records year in, year out of your life, there's so much of money spent on storage. And not only that, there is a tendency of being eaten away by rats or even burned, so it's hazard. So we have need to have a seamless digitization to store the information. So in fact, banking has now is become new. I mean, the banking system will probably appreciate this because eMudhra can allow you to go paperless, and then it can also authenticate all the signature for your customers. All right. We're talking about notarizing all their certificates and their signatures, their will, their paperless, all their documents that they sign. Okay. And in fact, eMudhra really revolutionized the way we handle documents, estate, even will, even anything actually you want to, like, you in the past we need to go personally to the bank to sign. Now having this identity governance, it will reduce you from traveling to another place. It speed up the process. You don't need to wait so long to authenticate a signature. Okay, so they are offering that very at a very good price as well. Then I have I won't be sharing all of it, but I think I'm gonna share the key product. One of them is also Hono AI. It's our seamless HR operators, you know, that offers highly robust system. You know, it's affordable, and also it's actually a digitization of a process from recruitment to retirement, and then roster scheduling, overtime calculation across region. It's not just local, you know, making human capital management become seamless and also fast and error-free as well. Then we also have I'm just trying to see what else I have inside my book. Oh, we have got Finbox. Finbox is a credit infrastructure company that provides fair, formal, and in context digital credit to 60 million micro SMEs in India. They enable any company to become a fintech company through embedded finance platform, which integrates seamlessly within the digital ecosystem. So that is also what, you know, earlier on we were talking about the credit ratings, and also we're talking about these credits. 60 million SMEs, man, no joke. So they are now expanding globally, and they have got a very good strong team as well, you know. And I definitely know that they offer a lot more benefits to a lot of companies here. Then the next one, last one I want to share is actually Design. They are actually driven AI tech and machine learning capabilities to detect cyber threats and also risk. Then fraud detection, AML platform, they fight financial crime, affordable, seamless, and integrates, reduce manual reviews. Because I think nowadays we need to be fast, we don't want to review so much of it. We've got onboarded cybersecurity companies like Cypherma and also Sweet Spots. But I don't want to hold you back, you know. And there are companies which we are working, large companies which we are working closely as well. They are the AWS, IBM, and then SAP Finance, Adenza, of course, Salesforce, our system, Adobe, as well as Silver Lake as well. So these are some of the companies that we're working on forward right now. And and I'm looking forward to expand their growth in Southeast Asia. Of course, I'm also looking to come back to Malaysia to work on the healthcare industry. And you can actually find and speak to me by contacting me. I've got I would say Almond Tech is Almond, ALMOND dash TECK, and then .com. So that is our website. So, and you can reach me through my email, which is Gloria at almond-tech.com, or you can also reach me through my mobile number, which is +65 9172 9033. So you can do a WhatsApp for me as well. That's my business number. And of course, you can find me and read about me, what I do in LinkedIn, in Facebook. I've got TikTok, I've got YouTube channel. You can search me, and I hope that I can serve you better. And I know that this interview is really lengthy, but then I'm glad I did this. Hopefully it has served you really well, and that I've shared enough information for you to know me a little bit, and also my company, and hopefully I can serve you better as well. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Edgar.
Thanks so much, Gloria, for sharing us your valuable insights on the significant importance of fintech initiatives to our virtual economy. Wish you all the best on your future endeavors.
Thank you, Edgar.
Thank you. This podcast episode is made possible by Advantech PT Limited. We would like to express our sincere appreciation to Gloria Sue on sharing us a remarkable perspective on FinTech initiative to our digital economy. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Amazon Music, Pocket Cast, Audible, Overcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Anchor.fm. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.